This Monday.com ad was created by a team of people and AI agents. Reese, our content agent, wrote the copy based on our best practices, like mentioning Monday.com 3 times. That was the second. Johnny, our coordination agent, built the timeline and kept everyone aligned. Olivia, our human creative director, stayed in the loop. Because agents are great, but they don't always know when a joke lands. She had one note: tell listeners it only takes minutes to build an agent. So, minutes. Create your own AI agent today on Monday.com.
Can only women be witches?
What did warlocks originally do?
And does abracadabra mean anything?
Open Sesame. Join us as we spell out some sorcery, cast some etymological incantations, and explain the particulars of prestidigitation on this enchanting episode of Words Unraveled.
Welcome to another Words Unraveled. I'm Rob Watts from the YouTube channel Rob Words.
And I'm Jess Zafaris, author of etymology books, including Useless Etymology. And today we are getting magical on Words Unraveled. And I'm very excited to spell out some of the origins we will come across.
I guess we'll probably get to whether or not the two types of spell are related during the course of this. But yeah, magical, mystical episode of Words Unraveled covering, yeah, all things occult, magical, and what? Sorcery.
Yeah, that is
the
thing.
Rob looks at his notes and says the first word that pops out. Let's start somewhere sensible, though. Let's start with the word magic and where it comes from, because I think it will be surprising to people, because there's another word that people will know that's very closely related to it, I think.
Magic in English has always more or less meant what it does today in the sense of influencing or predicting events or producing marvels and hidden natural forces and influencing supernatural entities. But it is ultimately from the Greek magos, which means that it's related to the word mage.
What I was getting at was the magi. The three wise men that visit Jesus take their name from the plural of magus, which is the Latin version of the Greek word you just mentioned. So when we call them the magi, we're calling them the prophets, almost like the sorcerers, really. But we also refer to them as the three kings, the three wise men. And magic, as we do to create words that are associated with a certain thing, is just putting ick at the end of it. So stuff associated with the magi, for example, would be magic. It's actually part of a slightly larger phrase, which is ars magic, right? Ars magica, which means the magic arts. So the arts associated with magi.
The magi, too, were, depending on whom you're, you know, reading about, a tribe of Median and Persian people, but also more specifically the religious specialists that were associated with the disciplines of astronomy and astrology and alchemy and dream interpretations and other esoteric knowledge. The three magi that we know from the biblical story, yes, but also a larger group of people who were affiliated with this type of discipline.
Magicians, ultimately. We have various words for people who practice magic, don't we? I mentioned one when I just blurted out the word sorcerer, earlier.
Sorcerer!
Sorcerer is a funny word because it's sort of heavy on redundancy insofar as it could just be sorcerer, but we say sorcerer because it's from the French sorcier, but we stuck an extra ER on the end of it because for some reason we don't like sorcier, but it does
sorcerer.
Mean a practicer of sorcery. But the French word for fate and for fortune is sort, which is S-O-R-T, and a sorcerer or sorcier is essentially a practicer of fortune.
That was true for the Latin root too, which also was a word for a lot, like drawing lots. And in medieval Latin, the term sortiarius was used for someone who tells fortunes by casting lots, which is also called sortition in English, which is used for entirely mundane purposes, like the random selection of people in juries as well.
Interesting. You mentioned juries as well, because conjurer is related to the word juror, right? It means swearing together, conjurer means. We call jurors jurors because they swear, they get sworn in.
Yes. That's kind of been an interesting journey too, because in like the word conjurer originally meant to command or charge someone by an oath. And it meant that for a good long time. And it was the way it was associated with magic is a little curious, because originally, like, we have this notion of practicers of witchcraft, which that's the older word for magic practice in English, and wasn't associated particularly with one gender or the other. But the magical meaning of conjure is from the idea of conspiring with demons and spirits to conjure a demon or spirit, originally meant to bind or charge or compel it. And there are many, like, legal documents from the 1500s and whatnot explaining that, like, conjuration is using prayers and the powerful name of God to compel the devil to speak or act.
This idea of sort of oaths and promises comes up in magic terminology quite a lot. For example, we use the word warlock, which comes from an old English term that means oath breaker. The idea of sort of, I suppose, you've broken your oath to the Lord by siding with the devil would be one way of interpreting it. There was also this other old English word that I really like, was a word logger or lawyer.
Mm-hmm. Word liar.
Yeah, exactly. So the lock mm-hmm. at the end of warlock is related to the word lie. It shares this same Germanic root, and the war, actually the German for true is still wahr, spelt with a W, and Old English had a similar word meaning true. So you're literally like a true liar, a truth liar uh-huh. is what a warlock is.
Just to explain, we got from oathbreaker to warlocks as male witches or sorcerers because the same Old English word was used to describe the devil, and by extension, someone who was in league with the devil or practiced devilish witchcraft came to be known as a warlock.
There's quite an interesting note in the OED about this that says that it's a Scottish word, as in it was more popular in Scotland, but it's one of the many words from Scottish dialect, or Scots as well, that is popularized in England by the writings of Walter Scott.
Yes.
Wrote an awful lot about Scotland, gave us another word that I will mention a little bit later on if we get round to it. But while we're in this vein, I think of warlocks as basically being male witches, and witch is a word that we really need to get into.
We absolutely do. By the way, Walter Scott comes up a lot in this because he ended up writing a lot about magical beings and things in the process of pulling out historical fiction in his era. You know, he was writing about the medieval era and made it very popular among people of his time. And so he became sometimes known as the great magician and things for his ability to conjure the past through historical fiction and such as well, yeah. Which is very fun. He comes up a lot in the descriptions of these words and the origins because he wrote about them so much.
Keen antiquarian. But tell us about witch.
Witch, okay. So the old English word for a woman who practices sorcery or witchcraft was weecha, and it was a feminine form of weecha, which is the word for a man who practices sorcery or witchcraft, and that's where the name of it's spelled like Wicca, which is the modern nature and occult-centric religion and spiritual practice, and it's basically the old English word for a male witch. Or also presumably a gender-neutral witch. And it was the non-gendered word for male and female practitioners until like the 1600s.
Yeah, and obviously we talk about Wiccans. That's from Wicca, the modern pagan thing. But they've literally just taken that old English word to give it a sort of ancient feel, even though I think paganism maybe even harks back even earlier than the Anglo-Saxons sometimes.
Another fun connection to witch here is to call someone a wicked witch is redundant because the word wicked is just an adjective variation of the old English word for witch.
I love this.
Yes,
isn't that fun? So great, isn't it?
But there were also different types of witches too. I think I've mentioned these before, maybe in our Halloween-y episode, but they're always fun. So I'm gonna rehash them again. In Old English, we had a Galdridge or a Galdor Craftigan who practiced incantations and necromancy. We had a Skinlacca who used phantoms and spirits, and then a Lubestra who works with drugs and potions and poisons and charms, which is like the lube on the front is also a word for a poison or a potion.
Meaning of that's changed a bit.
Yeah, well, it's spelled L-Y-B-B. It's just pronounced Lubestra.
Good to know.
Speaking of modern magic and Wiccans and stuff, I have been asked before by fellow fantasy nerds and modern witches if there is anything etymological to the difference between magic ending with a C or magic ending with a K or a CK. And there's a tendency among modern magic enthusiasts to use the C ending for stage illusions and general wonder, and magic ending in CK for occult or ritual or spiritual practices. And that is a pretty modern thing. The fact is, like every other Middle English word, the spelling was all over the place and it stayed wacky for a few hundred years. It was I-K-E, Y-K, Y-K-E, I-C-K, and even I-C-T. And that's in part because it was borrowed from French, where the ending was eek, I-Q-U-E. And then in Latin, it was spelled with a C-E. And then in Greek, if you Romanize the Greek term, it's spelled with a K. And it's so... Yes, more often with a K in Middle English, but literally all over the place. And the distinction between magic with a C and magic with a CK is an early 20th century invention popularized by the English occultist Aleister Crowley, who began using magic with a K around 1912 while working on this sprawling guide to mysticism and ceremonial ritual and yoga and the religious philosophy of thelema, which is a Greek word meaning will or choice or desire. And he used this K to separate the occult practice from stage magic.
Well, I didn't know that that distinction was drawn at all. So you've both introduced me to a curiosity and also absolved me of it at the same time. Fantastic.
Crowley is a really interesting figure. I highly recommend looking up photos of him because he's quite a character. He's also inspired the names of various characters in sci-fi and fantasy fiction, as well as a lot of the symbolism that he synthesized from various global philosophies into his works about magic with a K.
What do we know of other words for magic? Stuff like, you know, enchantment, incantation?
Those are basically the same word.
Yeah, they are, aren't they? They're basically about singing, aren't they?
Yes.
Essentially.
Charm,
related
too.
Related to the words chant. Charm as well. Wow.
Yeah, but different route. So tell us about enchantment and incantation first.
Well, I mean, they both come from the Latin cantare, meaning to sing. I mean, this comes up quite a lot, this verb, because we talked about cant language, which is slang of sort, but it comes from the idea of, you know, singing. When we talk about chanting, we're invoking that same Latin word. So enchantment, incantations, basically doubling up by saying, you know, you're singing a thing to make a thing happen.
Right. And that's happened even in Latin. Incantare meant to bewitch or to cast a spell upon. So this is a very old idea, associating singing with casting magic. Charm, by the way, is from the Latin word carmen, meaning song or verse or religious formula or enchantment. We see a related word in pieces like Carmina Burana, which is also related to the word charm. That's a big song collection, which is kind of fun. And at first, a charm was a chant or a spoken verse that was believed to heal or protect or compel or curse or whatever else. But Edmund Spenser used charm for an object that protected its wearer in The Fairy Queen, which is one of our first recorded instances of charm as an object rather than a song or a spoken phrase.
Other words like wonder. Wonder's an interesting one.
Ooh, tell me. I don't have this one.
Well, it's interesting insofar as it's a mystery, and we do like a mystery. It's common to Germanic languages. I mean, we know German has Wunder, you know, we talk about a Wunderkind or whatever, you know, that it just means miracle in German. In English, it just meant miracle as well. Dutch has Wunder as well. I'm sure I'm pronouncing it wrong. It might be Wanda. Swedish has Undran. Danish has Undren. I'm sure I'm pronouncing those wrongly as well. But the problem is, we don't know where it comes from before that. We know that all the Germanic languages have this word, but normally we can trace it back to some, I don't know, proto-Germanic term, you know, some early common term that they all got it from. And we can have a guess at what that meant, but etymologists have just really struggled to work that out. It just seems that they've all somehow ended up with it. And maybe where it sprung from, nobody knows.
We're left wondering about wonder.
We're all left wondering about wonder. It is in itself a wonder.
Ooh.
Well, I mean, that's also quite interesting what you're hitting on there, is that the idea that you can wonder, something can be wonderful, something can be a wonder, but you can also be filled with wonder.
Mm-hmm. Those are all really distinct senses.
They are, but they all come from the same place. It's all the idea of, you know, wonder is the state of having witnessed a wonder, which is a miracle. it's as simple as that. And the word miracle is basically the Romance language equivalent of wonder, is from Latin miraculum, which is an object of wonder.
Is it related to the word mirage?
Well, it might be if you go back to sort of...
at the root sense, maybe.
The root of miraculum, which is mirus, which means sort of something wonderful.
Let me double check.
Although I also wonder if it's about seeing something, because like the Spanish for to see is mira, isn't it? So I wonder if it's to do with that.
Mirage is either related to mirror or miracle, and we're not sure which.
Mirror as in like a reflection.
Yeah.
Which would make sense, right? Because that's what they tend to be, isn't it? They're actually mirages are reflections of the sky.
I'm reading too that the Arabic, there's this very similar Arabic word, which would make sense given the context in which we see mirages, but apparently it is unrelated because the Arabic word means ladder or stairs, and the resemblance seems to be kind of a coincidence. The standard word for an Arabic desert mirage is sarab. Speaking of which, when one sees a wonder or a miracle, it might be because someone cast a spell.
So it's to spell something related to casting a spell.
Yes, it is. So, but oddly indirectly. So the original meaning of the word spell in Old English was a story, like a tale or a speech or even a sermon, which is interesting. It also appears in the word, I think we've mentioned this, the word gospel, which has been read historically in many cases as God spell, meaning the word of God or the story of God. But it's the initial syllable in it is actually good in Old English, a good spell, a good story, a good message, because it is a loan translation of the Latin bona adnuntatio, meaning good news or glad tidings, which we also see used in modern English biblical contexts as well. So it's pretty logical how we could get to the magic spell sense from the earlier sense of spell as a story or a tale, something spoken or recited. And we have early instances of phrases like the spelling of charms, meaning to say them aloud. Spelling of songs, you might say, which is kind of fun. But the letter sense of spell, as in spelling, writing, or saying letters, is in Middle English from the same root and word family, but probably has influence from an old French relative that was used to mean explain or interpret, like spelling something out almost.
There's another fascinating link between writing and magic as well, and that's in the forms grammar and glamour.
Yes.
Which are two forms of exactly the same word. They both come from the French grammaire. One of them describes grammar, right? Describes a book explaining what we call the grammar of a language. Why do we call it the grammar of a language? Because it was in a book called a grammar, basically. But also these books, so grammar came to mean not just a book about the workings of a language, but it came to mean the workings of other disciplines. One of those disciplines was magic, witchcraft. And in Scotland in particular, we're there again. I wonder who's about to be mentioned. This word takes on the shape glamour instead of grammar, me putting on an ever so slightly Scottish inflected accent to do that. But we know how la and ra sounds tend to swap around. And this word becomes associated with magic. To cast the glamour over someone means to cast a spell on them. And then something that is glamorous ultimately is something that is enchanting. And now we use it to describe clothes that are beguiling. But that word catches on south of the border, as we sometimes call it in England, because of a certain Walter Scott.
He's the one who wrote about like fairies using glamour, right?
Yes, correct.
Disguising themselves as things, anything, or creating illusion magic.
I did this one in my newsletter a few weeks ago, so I'm clued up on this. I've got a nice quote here from the Gypsy Laddie, which is from a miscellany written in 1750. And she came tripping down the stair and at her maids before her. As soon as they saw her well-fed face, they cast the glamour over her. So it tended to be in this like idiomatic form, cast the glamour.
So a little bit before Walter Scott, but certainly popularized in part by his works.
Definitely popularized by him, yeah.
This is also basically the same word as like grimoire, right? As a book of spells.
Yes, it is. Yeah, it is exactly the same word, yeah.
That's awesome.
Yeah, it's cool, isn't it? Grammar and glamour. Grammar is glamorous by definition.
To close the book on spell.
Oh yeah, the spell book, the grammar indeed.
There's one more sense that we have not addressed, and it's doing something for a spell or for a period of time. And you would think that that would be like for the duration of saying a spell, but it's a totally unrelated word. It's from it's from an old English word meaning a substitute, and it was originally used in the context of a person working temporarily in someone else's place to give them a rest, to be a substitute for them, and then it was extended to any span of activity or time, like a cold spell or doing something for a spell.
I'm glad they're not related, because it would just require so much mental gymnastics to get between those
right.
two meanings, wouldn't it?
One of my favorite Middle English idioms, by the way, is spell the wind, which meant to talk uselessly. But that's in the like magic spell sense.
Oh, it's in the magic spell, not that earlier sense of it just meaning to talk.
Well, both,
so,
yes.
You know, to talk hot air.
Yeah, exactly.
Or to be a wind bag.
Hey, before your Q3 call, I've got the campaign brief ready. Built from last quarter's data and the competitive landscape.
Great. Did you include the differentiation angle the CMO asked for?
Already in there. Three angles no competitor's using right now. Just need your approval.
Approved. Thanks. Oh, agents, where would we be without you?
Somewhere with a lot more tabs open.
Create your first Monday agent in minutes at monday.com.
Wiseacre is an interesting word with a magical origin, you know, like calling someone a wiseacre.
Yeah, again, I don't associate it with magic.
Not at all, right. So now it means a person who acts like they know everything, right? And it's a sarcastic word. The original meaning was more respectable. It referred to a soothsayer or prophet or a person believed to possess special knowledge. And it's a Dutch word. Wijsager was the original word, and it meant soothsayer. So the first element is wise, but the second element isn't acre. It means sayer or speaker. And Old English had a pretty close relative, witega, which meant prophet or seer or wise man as well. It's related to the word wit and wise, which wit originally meant an understanding or knowledge instead of cleverness. So this Dutch word gets folk etymologized into acre over time, probably because the spelling went all haywire in early modern English, and it was shifted first to wise-aker, which got used sarcastically for a foolish person who wished to seem wise. And so we've got these early records from like the 1600s of physician Richard Whitlock calling incompetent physicians Dr. Wiseacres with that A-K-E-R spelling. And then in The Spectator, the A-C-R-E spelling was introduced first, just kind of a different spelling, making fun of a priest or another windbag type. And then in punny jokes about people being wise by their acres, that is thought to be wise by being virtue or by virtue of being rich, holding land, being rich in other things.
I can't believe we got to wiseacre before we got to wizard.
Oh, yeah, we should probably go back to that, huh?
Which just means wise person.
Yes, but it has my favorite ending on it.
It has your favorite ARD ending. Give us some more words with ARD endings.
So a drunkard is someone who drinks too much, right? Our braggart is someone who brags too much.
Mustard is something wizard. That's musty.
Musty. It's like wine must. It's like seedy and intense in flavor. And then a dullard is someone who's dull, but a wizard is someone who's very wise. So we've got this intensifier that's often an insult, but not always.
And so a wizard and a wiseacre, actually, they're doublets effectively.
The word wizard wasn't really used until the 15th century. So it's a little bit later than these other words for magic users that we've been talking about.
When I think of wizards, I always think of Merlin. And specifically, I think of him from the Disney Sword in the Stone.
Yes.
So I did look up where the name Merlin comes from. It's a Geoffrey of Monmouth invention insofar as he Latinizes a Welsh word to create Merlin. So he calls, in his telling of King Arthur, he calls Merlin Merlinus. Merlinos is actually his interpretation of the Welsh name Myrddin. Myrddin was a famous bard, a Welsh poet.
Does that have any relation to names like Mervyn and Marvin?
Well, that's a good question, actually. So it's spelled M-Y-R-D-D-I-N.
Of course it is.
Terribly Welsh. Terribly Welsh. Is it related to Mervyn? Maybe. Maybe. Marvin? Mervyn? I wonder. I mean, the thing with names is it's tricky, isn't it?
Yeah.
But there will be an answer to that. Yeah. I just don't know it, Jess.
I'd say the oldest magic user, magic person that I could think of would probably be in terms of like Western history, would be an oracle, right?
Ooh, that's a good one. What does that mean?
Greek oracles weren't called oracles. They were called chrismi, or they were sometimes called mathis. So that would be the first one of those means to declare or to proclaim. And the other one meant seer. And then the Romans picked up oracles as well. These are the like people who were vectors for divine messaging and were often people who like stayed doped up in temples and things all the time or observed those people. And but
not doped up. They weren't doped up. They were inspired by magic spirits.
Right. with that spire bit being an important part of that, right? Because of the breathing in of both the spirit and the drugs that gave them the inspiration.
Yes, and fumes.
Yes, indeed.
I'm sure you were going to get there, but I was going to ask whether oracle is related to like oracular. Does it mean like seer? Is it related to eyes?
It means to pray to or beseech. So the logic would be the other way around. Originally, oracular just meant the nature of oracles. So they're seeing in that capacity. So the place that oracles hung out in Rome was called an oraculum, and the root orare means to pray to or to beseech.
I mentioned the word occult. Occult has got a surprising relative, which is conceal. The cull in occult comes from celare, which is, Latin to hide, which is also in conceal, which essentially means to hide together. The oh at the start is really a contraction of ob, which we have in other words like obscure, for example. That's just sort of really doubling down on the idea of hiding it away.
I feel like we need a song about prefix assimilation because there are so many fun examples of it.
Martin, insert a song here about prefixes.
Well, you've got re to say you'll do again and pre, which means before. With this I'll never disagree. Do I have to do some more? Sub means under, not means not. The range of these just feels no stop. But miss means bad or wrong, it's true to say. That's enough.
Oh, that's excellent. But the root that you were talking about is also, you said conceal, right?
Yes.
But it's also related to words like cellar and ceiling.
That makes a lot of sense, doesn't it? So a cellar is essentially a concealed bit of your house?
Mm-hmm. Yes.
The ceiling is the bit that hides you? What's that?
Or covers you over. I mean, the root means to cover.
It's to cover, right? Mm-hmm. Yeah, of course it is.
The earliest instances of occult, as you've alluded to, just meant anything secret or private. And then it extended to like esoteric things, which esoteric more or less means occult, but Greek. I really wish that this word had a more interesting origin. But well, it means like within instead of covered over. But the Greek esoterikos meant belonging to an inner circle, but it's just like kind of an extension of eso, meaning within. So like super within.
I've been looking into magic words, if you'd like to go there, as in what's the magic word? It's abracadabra, not please.
Yes, yes.
As I was brought up, told that it was. But we have these
things.
That's
one of them anyway.
yeah. Well, indeed, it's true. But we have like abracadabra, we've got hocus pocus, alakazam. Do any of these actually mean anything? Is the big question.
We'll find out if anything weird happens outside of our homes while we're doing this segment.
I just cast all of them. Abracadabra is a weird one. No one seems to really know where it came from. One of them is a word that you introduced me to as a possible source of it, which is abacadarius, which is
A-B-C-D.
pertaining to the alphabet. Yeah, you can have an abacadarius poem, which is one where each line starts with different letter of the alphabet. So it's saying abracadabra, an incantation like a spell, which, okay, we're back to letters and linking letters and magic once again, aren't we? That's one of the theories. Another one is that it's from Abraxas, which was just another sort of magic word. You'd say Abraxas.
The earliest instance we have of it is from the Roman scholar Quintus Serenius Simonicus, who wrote this medical poem called Liber Medicinalis, or the medicinal precept. And it has a bunch of lines of Latin hexameter, including popular remedies that were drawn from like Pliny the Elder, and then a couple of other people. There's this passage where he prescribes abracadabra for a dangerous recurrent fever. And in order to cure your dangerous recurrent fever, you have to write out the word abracadabra and then drop a letter every time you continue to write it. So abracadabra, 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 and so on until you get the letter A. And then presumably you would write the word in and fold it up inside an amulet and wear it around the neck and then not die.
Yeah.
Supposedly.
Yeah, you create a sort of triangle, pop it on a bit of paper, stick it in a charm, keep hold of it, keep it close to your heart.
A fun vocab word for that type of spell is apotropaic, a charm intended to turn away disease or danger or evil.
But actually, historically, that's been used to mean nonsense as well, abracadabra. We don't really use it like that now, but we do still use hocus pocus to mean nonsense. You say it's a load of hocus pocus. Or mumbo jumbo. Mumbo jumbo is another word that derives from magic of a sort. A hocus pocus was another word for a kind of magician or a kind of a joker, actually, a performer. You know, it wasn't necessarily the thing that they did. It was them. They were the hocus pocus. And it's possible that that term in turn just comes from a single person who called themselves hocus pocus, and then they start to refer to them all as hocus pocus. But there are a few theories about where it comes from. Most of them are based around the idea that it is a sort of nonsense Latin. One of them is from, so this is a guy called John Tillotson, who was Archbishop of Canterbury, and he wrote about this in 1694, going back quite a way here. And he wrote that in all probability, those common juggling words of hocus pocus are nothing else but a corruption of hoc est corpus, by way of ridiculous imitation of the priests at the Church of Rome in their trick of transubstantiation. So a nice dig at the Catholics there while he's at it, because obviously he is Protestant. That's both explaining precisely which bit of Latin it might be taking the mickey out of and why it would be a mickey take in the first place. But that's kind of been discredited as where it comes from, because it basically, that theory just comes from John Tillotson. He seems to have worked it off the top of his head. But there's another theory that was posited in 1655. I'm getting these off the OED, by the way, if anyone wants to go and check them. It says, I will speak of one man that went about in King James's time, who called himself the King's Majesty's most excellent hocus pocus, and so was called because that at the playing of every trick he used to say, hocus pocus tontus tolontus vade celerite jubio, a dark composure of words to blind the eyes of the beholder to make his trick pass the more currently without discovery. Basically, he'd go, and then, no one would notice the sleight of hand that he was performing. Is this a point where we might want to divert onto talking about sleight of hand very briefly?
Oh, yeah, that's a good idea. We should absolutely.
I want to go into Alakazam, but you mentioned that you researched sleight of hand, and I want to know about it.
Yes. So when using sleight of hand, one does not have slight hands in the sense that they are small. One is being sly with one's hands. It's related to the word sly, and it's spelled S-L-E-I-G-H-T. Oh. That's a common egg corn, is replacing sleight of hand with an E-I with sleight of hand with just an I. And the Middle English word slight was spelled in a zillion different ways, though, so there's also that. But it meant craft or cunning or strategy or deceptive skill, basically slyness, literally that.
Right. Yes. Slyness of the hands.
Yes, indeed, slyness of the hands. And it's not related to the word slight, the small sense of slight.
Yeah. So it's not related to that one. It's also not related to slight someone.
To slight someone, right,
but
exactly.
But that is related to the small slight. Basically, you're belittling them when you slight someone. You're making them slight.
Small slight originally meant like flat or smooth or sleek or hairless, and then it kind of extended to slim or slender or light textured.
Okay.
What?
It's funny that it means like polished, and then it also means hairless, like you sort of polished the hair off someone. It's a very slight man. It's just this shiny bald. I don't know. I'm trying to think of someone who might be slight under that definition. Very silly.
By that logic, to slight someone is basically to belittle them, to make them small.
Can I bring us back to magic words just very briefly? And Alakazam. Alakazam's quite a new one. It's first recorded, written down, meaning like a magic word in the early 1900s. It would have had currency before then, probably before it got written down. But I really enjoyed the earliest citation, again, in the Oxford English Dictionary for this one. And it was a wishing spell, and whoever repeated it could be anywhere or be anything he desired. It read like this. Alakazam bazazza ki, hickory dickory dock. Omega om a pi ka pi, odon a vet of hoch.
Isn't that in something... like a movie or something?
I thought it reminded me an awful lot of the 1950s Disney film.
Ah, yes.
Cinderella. It's very similar to Salagadoola, Mechikaboola, Bippity Boppity Boo.
It also sounds like something the Disney Merlin.
Yes, it is. It's like that hockety pockety wockety whack.
Yeah.
That. You're right. It's a thing. Well, I just think that those must be inspired by this kind of thing, right? I mean, those Disney films are obviously coming quite close to that, really, that 1902 usage, you know, within half a century of it. Why not? Because it's not only nonsense words, it's working in real words as well, like bippity boppity boo is.
Yes.
Salagadoola means mechigaboola roo. But the thingamabob that does the job is bippity boppity boo. I did look this up.
Excellent.
Yes, I did.
That's got to be at least partially inspired or from the sort of the syllables that oracles would produce that were probably a combination of nonsense and real words as well, right?
It's non-specific foreign language noise.
That's what it is.
A bit like tongues, but Alakazam is used, before it's used to mean to be magic words, it is used as a sort of placeholder foreign word. The earliest quotes for it have it, you know, as being used to describe a person who talks a language that you don't understand, saying the fella is Alakazam, or Alagazam means he speaks language I don't get. Probably a slight on Arabs, probably.
Yeah, it's something like
who
that.
Who might be using the syllables Allah quite a lot, reasonably. Yeah, that's where it comes from. And also, I do think that these abracadabra, Alakazam, they have this sort of Eastern feel to them quite deliberately.
Much in the same way that mumbo jumbo is a corruption of an African term, right?
Yeah, mama jumbo, yeah, which was not a magician, but sort of a demon of sorts that would punish women who had argued with their fella, basically, would publicly shame women. But it came to mean, so it meant the person.
Like a folk character.
Which would be a member of the village who was dressed up according to the, you know, the British accounts of this practice. We don't actually have written accounts from the Mandinka who actually performed this ritual. But the English accounts, which are not reliable really, say that this is how it went. And they called these people Mama Jumbo, Mumbo Jumbo, which is just a way of taking the piss or anglicizing the sound, and then it becomes, you know, nonsense because they think this is superstitious nonsense, and then we refer to stuff that is nonsense as mumbo jumbo. It's quite an interesting one, actually.
It is a really interesting one.
It's in my book.
Excellent. Oh, yay. Wait. Tell us more about your book.
Well, I don't want to reveal too much because I've only just finished writing the thing, but sometime in 2027... people will get to read it.
And it's about words around the world, right?
I mean, if you Google Rob Word's book. You'd probably find it.
Excellent.
But yes, it is. It's about words that we have borrowed from cultures all around the world. But I'll save the big reveal for later when I've had more sleep.
Another sort of Eastern inspired and sounding one is open sesame. Why do we open sesame? It's closely associated with the 1001 Nights, which was adapted in French, but is from an oral Arabic source and specifically Syrian stories and then earlier Arabic collections. But the reason for sesame is unclear. There have been different spellings before. The earliest translation gives the command as sesamum, open, and then it transitioned to sesame in the story of Ali Baba, who overhears this band of 40 thieves opening a cave filled with treasure by saying what now became open sesame. But why sesame? One explanation is that it points to, it's like a sesame seed pod, which splits open when ripe. Another says that it could have to do with sesame oil, but it's not really clear why. And then another one suggests it might be an unrelated word that could be related to like a Hebrew word for name or something like that. So maybe it's like evoking either any name or a name of God or something. But basically it is a corruption of another word probably that was folk etymologized into the more familiar sesame.
It's also not as some people would have it. Open says me.
Right. It's also not that.
You can scotch that quite easily by pointing out that sesame in French is pronounced sesame.
Yes.
It doesn't work.
Yeah. First in French. Mm.
Here's one. Have you ever heard this one? Izzy Wizzy, let's get busy.
I have heard of that one. I assume that's relatively recent.
Yeah. Well, it's known to children of a certain, it's known to adults of a certain age in Britain, because it was the magic words spoken by a specific magician, a furry yellow magician called Sooty, who is a little bear with black ears. And my goodness, I've just remembered. I've got one. Hold on.
Where's Rosie put it? He's here somewhere. I found him!
Would you like to meet Sooty, Jess?
I would like nothing better in the world than to meet Sooty. Ah, oh, he's perfect.
He is. He's adorable. He would say hello, but Sooty doesn't speak. What's that?
What did Sooty say?
He said he's got a terrible speech impediment, unfortunately. That's why he prefers not to speak. It's okay, Thotty. He's adorable. So this is a key character from my childhood, by the way.
Oh, excellent. Sooty,
yeah, little bear with Matthew Corbett was his owner, who inherited Sooty from his dad, Harry Corbett. And yeah, generations of British kids watched this silent little bear on telly.
That's adorable.
But he did do magic. He had a magic wand, but it would be Matthew or Harry that would say, "Izzy Wizzy, let's get busy." And
then that's so cute. Adorable. I didn't know that one at all. That's adorable.
Yeah. I mean, at the time, I didn't think Izzy Wizzy, let's get busy had any sort of sexual element to it. But now it sounds that way, doesn't it?
Like the adult ears. I don't think that's Sooty's fault.
I don't think that's what Sooty meant. Sooty didn't mean that. That's more sweep behavior. Don't get me started on sweep.
What is sweep? Another character?
Yeah. Sweep was a dog who also didn't say very much, but just went... really tedious to be around, I'm sure, but absolutely my favourite. Do I have a... Right, we can cut all of this out.
Oh, he's beautiful. Funny enough,
this is Sweep.
Hello, Sweep.
He's a doggy agent of chaos.
He's lovely. Oh, and he squeaks.
He squeaks, yeah, but he really goes... And sometimes you could tell what he was saying, and it would be something a little bit rude for the parents. You know.
That's great.
What has happened to this podcast?
Welcome to the Words Unraveled Puppet Show.
Anyway, these characters, they're still going. I met the actual Sooty and the actual Sweep when I was working at BBC Radio Derby a few years ago. They came in for an interview and I got a picture with them.
Excellent.
Stupid tangent.
I had one more magic word. Do you know why we say presto, which means quickly in Italian, as a magic word?
No. I mean, other than like making it makes the thing happen faster than it would otherwise have happened.
That is really it. It used to be paired with other words. Like you would say presto, be gone, or presto, away to things. But then it just got shortened to presto.
Hey, presto.
Yeah. Yeah, exactly. Hey,
mm-hmm. Yeah.
I can close on prestidigitation and ledger domain if you'd like.
You can close on those because I had no idea what they mean. I don't want to have to try and say them. But I am interested to know where they came from and what they signify.
I should start with ledger domain because that's the more straightforward one. Ledger domain means sleight of hand or conjuring or skillful deception. And it's a French phrase just squashed together to make, right. Yeah, ledger domain, meaning light of hand or quick of hand. Basically means the same thing as sleight of hand, but not French.
And we pronounce it in this sort of obnoxiously English way.
Ledger domain.
That's awful. Mm.
But it's been around for quite some time. Like it's been in English since Middle English. So it's quite an old word. Prestidigitation is kind of a funny one. A prestidigitator is the older form of the word. It's a person who uses sleight of hand, particularly like skillful fingers like sleight of hand. And the earliest prestidigitator was Jules de Rovere, who coined the term in 1830. And he wanted a grander professional title than earlier French words like escamateur, who is a conjurer who makes objects disappear, and a physicienne, a term for performers who presented tricks like demonstrations and of natural philosophy and physics and things. He wanted to associate it with its noble origins. So he made a word that combines that same root we see in presto, like preste in French, where the presto means quick or nimble. And then the word digitus, which is Latin for finger. So together we get someone who is quick with their fingers. It does have Latin roots, kind of. It has a Latin predecessor. The Latin prestigiator meant a juggler or a trickster or a deceiver. And the term prestigiae meant tricks or deceptions or illusions, and is related to the word prestige, which we also see used in magical contexts.
So when we talk about something being prestigious, what are we really saying then?
So the earliest recorded sense of the word prestigious was practicing illusion or juggling or deluding people, being like full of tricks. And it appears to have been derogatory until the 19th century. And the idea, it was more positive. It was like having a dazzling influence. It was ameliorated to imply someone who has the illusion, but like perhaps the earned illusion of grandeur. Initially, we have it prestige recorded as like the illusion of one's personal merit, like a flattering illusion. And then it twisted into a reputation for excellence or importance or authority, apparently earned.
Glorious.
On that prestigious note, we should draw this episode to a close.
Yes, presto, endo. Thank you for joining us on another Words Unraveled.
We'll see you next time for a little more word magic.